Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, August 21st, 2011. This is episode 798. Enjoy. Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit.
Well, hey there. A good day to you. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in Leo Laporte's brand new studio as he sits down and starts the show. Here he is.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks,
thanks,
Leo,
for filling in there. Very nice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, everybody. Good to see you, and welcome to the show. And you heard Scott Wilkinson's voice. That's because today is Home Theater Day.
Yay!
So let me give you the phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, we'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Anywhere, toll-free in the U.S. And we would, you know, we could take a few non-computer questions, but really what mostly we'd like to do non-home theater is home theater stuff. So since we've got the genius here, hey, thank you for coming up.
Hey, my pleasure.
It's really nice to see you.
It's great to be here.
And how's things been going in the home theater realm?
Well, things have been going very well. We've got the Cedia show coming up in a couple of weeks.
This is the installers show, the home theater installers show.
It's pretty high-end stuff. It's a custom installation, a lot of projectors. We're going to be there in Indianapolis this year for a week. And meanwhile, everything's going great. The hometheater.com website's going very well.
Awesome.
We have a brand new feature I wanted to let everybody know about called Top Picks, which is we've taken all of our reviews of TVs and speakers and audio-video receivers and so on, and picked the three or four best ones, put them in a separate section called Top Picks. So if you're looking for one of those products, you can instantly see which ones we thought were the very best of all the ones we've reviewed.
I like that.
So it really narrows the field quite a bit because, you know, we review a lot of product.
Yes.
And, you know, people having to wade through all that to get to what they might want to actually buy is pretty tough. So we did it for you.
Very nice. That's hometheatermag.com.
What happens? Hometheater.com.
.com. Yeah. What happens if people go to ultimateavmag.com? Does that just redirect
just
now?
Just redirects now, good. Yeah. Exactly right.
Good,
yeah.
good. Well, the couple of things I want to talk about before we get to our home theater questions, and I will be getting an awful lot from Scott, but there were a few things that happened this week that maybe people want to hear a little bit about.
One, sure.
This was a crazy week for tech news. I mean, first of all, Google buys Motorola Mobility on Monday.
For $12.5 billion?
Amazing. You know, jeez, that's more than Google makes in 2 years. I mean, it's not a...
That's incredible.
You think, oh, well, Google's got plenty of money, and they do. They have over $30 billion in the bank. But nevertheless, paying something, imagine you buying a house or buying anything, a car that was 2 years' income.
Yeah.
That's a significant purchase.
No kidding.
House, I guess, makes sense. And in a way, this is that kind of investment for Google because what they're getting for this is not a phone company. You know, I think a lot of people thought, well, what, you know, is Google going to start making special Google phones designed specifically for the Android marketplace, and I don't think that's really what they care about. In fact, I think there's a risk in them doing that because, remember, there's a lot of other manufacturers, Samsung, LG.
Yeah, is Google going to get into the hardware business?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that some people have wondered is this a ploy for Google to get in the hardware business? And I actually don't think it is. I think it's really about the patents, and that's the most important thing to understand with all this. Google has been in a patent dogfight, infighting. I mean, just terrible. With Microsoft and Apple, sometimes a little indirectly. You know, Apple's not suing Google directly yet. They're suing Samsung over their Android phones, saying their Android phones are too close to Apple's iPhone and their tablet is too close to Apple's iPad. But really, the implication of all this is, here we come, Google. Once we get this out of the way, we're coming after you.
Uh-oh.
And so I think that Google needed to, well, you've heard the phrase lawyer up. They needed to patent up. Mm. They needed to have patents that they could use to defend themselves against Microsoft and Apple's patent lawsuits. And, you know, these patents don't have to be exactly in the same area. They just have to be things they can sue or countersue Microsoft and Apple over. And having that that patent a quiver for their bow makes them a lot more potent. You know, they only had 1,000 patents only. Now they're getting over 12,000 patents from this deal.
Oh, man.
So, in fact, so many patents that now they have more patents in mobility and cell phones than anybody, more than anybody. So they're really the king of the hill when it comes to this.
So this is really why they spent that money.
And I don't think they're going to go around suing people. Their goal is to keep from being sued, to let Android grow. Mm-hmm. They've been giving Android away. Google's philosophy is the more people who use Android, the more people who use the internet, the more money we'll make. Because, of course, everywhere you go on your phone and on your internet and on your browser, you're going to see Google. So that's really the strategy here. So that was the big purchase and a big shock. But there's and I thought, oh, this is the story of the summer. And then an even bigger shock came in on Thursday. Hewlett-Packard said, we're getting out of the PC business. Now, this is the...
Can you believe that?
If you take out Apple out of the equation, Hewlett-Packard's the number one PC manufacturer in all of the U.S. They sell more laptops, more desktops than anybody. And for them to say, we can't make money in this business, it's not a profitable business for us, is quite the shocker. Quite the shocker. So, and by the way, there's a side effect to this, because part of this business is that WebOS operating system. They bought Palm about a year ago and said, we're going to make WebOS-based phones and, of course, their WebOS-based tablet, which is the touchpad. They made it. They sold it. Nobody bought it. And the WebOS is gone. In fact, yesterday, actually, I shouldn't say that, because yesterday they put the WebOS on sale for $99. And if you snoozed, you lost, because it's gone, man. I don't think there's anyone who has any more $99 touchpads. It's a risky thing, but at $99, I guess you could do it. You know, basically, you'd be buying a device that there would be no more software for, no more updates for, nothing, no support for.
Right.
But I think people were, you know, so I thought, well, for $99, maybe I'll get my feet wet in the tablet space. And, you know, what we don't know and what could really change the equation is, we don't know what HP plans. Are they going to sell the business? Are they going to sell the tablet business? Are they going to sell the PC business? Are they going to spin it off to a separate company? Would they, and I'd love it if they did this, would they open source WebOS and allow it, like Android, to be free to anybody? That would really throw a monkey wrench into the cell phone business and
sure.
the tablet business.
Sure.
So, you know, the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. We live in interesting times, Scott. So those are a couple of the big stories. I didn't want to go without mentioning those, because I know people are really thinking about them.
Oh,
I
sure.
should also mention, you might hear a little burble of sound behind us. We're having an open house in the Tech Guy Labs. It's one of the reasons Scott's up here. Our grand opening party is later tonight. And we've opened the doors to hams, because we have a spectacular...
Oh, it's amazing.
Have you gone over there?
I have, yeah. I was here last night.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
And
I'm sorry I missed you.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, I went home about 7, yeah, and I guess I missed you coming in. But we have built... ICOM donated some amazing ham radios. Beautiful things.
Oh, and some old stuff too.
Well, and then I have to thank Mike DeRoe, who's a very well-known radio engineer, and Dave Jennings, for donating, I helped him with the cost, but frankly, they donated a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
A classic 1961 AM radio transmitter. This was put into service in 1961 on WDLS in Jefferson City, Iowa.
Wow.
Was in service for 40 years. Just a little station, 500-watt station in Jefferson City.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike picked it up when they exchanged or traded it in. He said, well, do you want that old thing? And they said, no, you? it's 1,000 pounds. Will you take it? And Mike did. And he treats it like a classic car.
Yeah.
New paint job, new chrome.
Totally restored.
Totally restored. New tubes, everything. And it's working and it's beautiful.
It's amazing.
So people are coming up here to see that too. And then Dave Jennings gave us this great Collins console like I used when I started.
Yeah.
Anyway, Leo Laporte, Scott Wilkinson, your call's next. Scott and I are jamming down, getting down beautiful sounds. This is just production music that they put, you know, cheap production music.
It's
they
the
put
same out. Thing every week. Well, but and there's I a rock reason to it every time.
Well, there's a reason for it. You know, they the stations who are taking the, you know, there's 160 stations taking the show.
Yeah.
And the engineers who are sitting there pushing the buttons, they play the same music. So the engineers know that this isn't the show coming back. This is not the bumper music.
Right.
This is just the interstitial. And frankly, if you, as I have listened to it for 3 or 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. you know exactly when it's time to come. Excuse me. It's kind of come back because you go, oh, I heard that last bar. I know what's time to come. Hey, real quickly, I just wanted to mention one of our sponsors for this, especially for this podcast, and that's Netflix.com.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you're a Netflix. In fact, I think everybody who listens to this show is a Netflix subscriber.
It's actually great. If you've got the bandwidth to stream it down, it's wonderful.
It streams on almost anything. Most of the new Blu-ray players have built-in Netflix. A lot
Most
of the TVs
of the new
we
TVs
saw. Yes. Yeah, that's almost like the gold standard. If you're going to have internet connection, you got to have Netflix.
That's right.
But you could do it also with a Roku, my favorite.
Yeah.
Apple TV does
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, Nintendo. We probably, yeah. there's a device in your house that'll stream Netflix to your TV.
That's right.
And the quality is good.
It's really pretty good.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's not Blu-ray, but it's high
it's
def.
It's not
in
Blu-ray,
some cases.
But it's you know, the high def. I recently reviewed a Samsung TV with Netflix, and I looked at Netflix quite a bit, and the high def looked pretty darn good.
I love it. And that's all I watch. Every night I watch Netflix.
Uh-huh.
Last night I was watching a great, you know, Burning Man is every, it's coming up next
It's coming
month.
Right up.
I've never been.
Neither have I, and
Tickets
I've always
are sold
wanted
out,
to go.
And I always think I should go. There's a great documentary Netflix just added.
Oh, yeah.
Burning Man 2003. It is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
I watched that last night on Netflix streaming. So
there
here's the
go.
Deal. If you're not a member, you got to be by now. But if you're not, just in case, Netflix.com/tech guy. You can go there, and you can get a Netflix a subscription for 30 days for free, so you can see. I want to watch this terrible show
Which
called
one?
Ping Pong Playa. See, I would never rent this. I would never get the DVD.
Right.
But on streaming, you say, well,
yeah,
you can be
hell?
Curious.
Yeah,
you can be garbage curious,
yeah.
and you can watch it for 10 minutes. And if it turns out to be kind of funny,
yeah,
you got it. Anyway, if you already have it, tell a friend. Netflix.com/tech guy. We really appreciate it if you'd spread the word because. It helps us out, and it's one of the ways we are able to do this podcast. We made a deal. You know, this has changed. For the first 3 years, we couldn't have any advertising. The podcast, Premier Radio Networks, owns the show, and
sure.
they didn't let us put it in there.
Yeah.
And we just made a deal with them as part of the renewal
mm-hmm.
That we would do that. And so it's helped us a lot because we've been doing this pro bono for 7 years. And
now you can put it some...
Nice, I can because it costs us money. Anytime we put out a podcast, we've got editors editing it.
Sure.
We have to do, you know, we have to put it up. We use bandwidth, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So... it's nice if we can monetize it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell your friends, Netflix.com/tech guy. And that's what it says in, let me check here.
Very good.
It says it on the lower third. You know, I think it's actually Netflix.com/twit.
I think so, too. I
you
mean,
know,
it is when I do the ads.
It says tech guy in the lower third, but I think that must just be an error. I'm going to fix that. Yeah, in the copy it says twit.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to change it to tech guy so that we could
so you
monitor
could,
it.
You monitor the ones that come from the radio
but
show.
I think that's wrong. So don't listen to Leo. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Netflix.com/twit. Still worth it.
Oh, yeah. Digital Maidens on a marathon with Star Trek TNG from...
I know. You get all the old Star Trek series.
Oh, yeah. I watched those.
The original.
They look great.
So much
I even watched Twilight Zone and it looked great.
Yeah. Mr. Banhammer. Mr. Banhammer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number, and especially this week, if you've got home theater questions, because look who's here. And by the way, he's wearing a Color Bars t-shirt, so we can, you know, his wife called and said, you're a lot cooler than Leo is. Well, yeah, she could tell from the Color Bars that the white is not old. The white balance isn't good. We're going to work on that. Hey, Scott Wilkinson.
How you doing,
Home
Leo?
Theater Magazine at hometheater.com, and he's going to answer a bunch of questions for us. In fact, are you ready to go right to the phones?
You bet.
All right.
Let's do it.
Our first call of the day is Ricky in Texarkana. Hey, Ricky, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
Hello, Leo. Hello, Scott. Long time, first time.
Yay.
Yay.
Welcome.
So I'm having a new house built.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I was wondering, is HDMI enough, or is there a compelling reason to do component video?
Well, that's a really good question. A lot of installer friends of mine actually prefer to run component video.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that because it goes farther?
Not necessarily. You can run HDMI far if you use these devices called Balans.
Right.
Which convert HDMI into Cat5, and then you can run it hundreds of feet. But a lot of installers have problems with HDMI, with handshaking, for example, with what's called EDID, the extended display identification. If things don't match up exactly, if the devices don't communicate with each other, you can run into problems. And installers have done that a lot, have complained to me a lot that happens. And so they end up running component, which is okay. I myself have not run into these problems. So then again, I'm not installing into houses with these Balans and long runs and so on.
Balan is B-A-L-U-N. It's actually short for balance unbalanced.
Oh, sort of like modem. I never knew that. Okay.
Yeah, and in fact, Bob Heil, our ham guy, said, an audio guy, does all our microphones, says, it's Balan. Because it's balanced, unbalanced. I think it's Balan. But anyway,
right.
you know what we're talking about. They're little devices that you put on an HDMI or HDMI. They're not cheap. They're a couple $100.
No, that's true.
And you put it, then you can put an Ethernet cable in. That's because I think they have a little repeater in there.
Correct. Amplifier. Now here's a reason not to go component, which is that Blu-ray players in particular, those made this year, made after December 31st, 2010, have their component output limited to standard definition. The only way you can get high definition out of a Blu-ray player, a new Blu-ray player, is via HDMI.
Okay.
So that's a reason to go HDMI.
Component is basically an analog high def.
Correct.
It's not really as good as HDMI, though, is it?
No, it's not.
Because it's analog. It's not. You're taking the digital output of a high def cable box or a DVD player, Blu-ray player, or some high def device. You're taking it, converting it to analog, sending it across the wire. Mm-hmm. Then when it gets to the TV, it has to be converted back to digital.
Correct. So you're going through two conversion cycles, which I never like.
It's not ideal.
No.
But it may be less troublesome.
Exactly. This is what installers tell me anyway. So are you having an installer put in your system?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Well,
so he's probably lobbying for it, huh? Is that what's happening, Ricky?
Well, I just wasn't entirely sure which way I should go, but it sounds like HDMI.
I really think so. If it's at all possible to do, that is the best possible connection to make, and I would use it.
Here's what I would do.
Yes?
I would put in Cat6, which is high-quality Ethernet cabling.
Yeah.
If you could afford it, I'd put in fiber in Cat6 and just have a junction everywhere in the house. And then if you want to throw video, you can get a Balan, put it on one end and the other end, and that's going to cost a little bit, but you're spending a little bit of money to begin with.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then you have that as an option, and you could go HDMI. And I bet you there's an analog way also to send component. You know, all those Balans do really is put an amplifier on and match the wires up. They're not re-digitizing it or converting it in any way. It's just an electrical connection.
Right.
And then when you have the Cat6, the other advantage of that, of course, is now you can also do data if you chose. You can't do data. I don't think. I'll have to look. I don't think you can do data and send video over the same Cat6, though.
So I'm not sure about that. I'd have to look that up.
That's an issue. But while the walls are open, this is interesting. You know, you want more than just a video guy consulting you. You want a data guy, too.
That's right.
So that he'll represent the interests, because I presume you want data. Actually, the JRB596 in our chat room says, well, no, just run Cat6 HDMI and component. and then you're set. And that's true. The expense really is having the wall open and putting the junction in. The cabling's not all that expensive.
That's right. And while the wall is open, now's the time to put everything in that you
I have to say,
want.
I learned my lesson, though, for years. I was saying, get the wall open, put in Cat5. Probably at the time it was Cat5. Because, you know, that's how and then all of a sudden Wi-Fi comes along. And all those people spent a lot of money putting wiring in the wall. They're just using Wi-Fi. They didn't need to put any wiring in the wall at all.
Will we
ever see wireless high-def TV?
We have it now.
They pushed it.
Yeah.
And remember, a number of companies had some solutions that never got materialized.
Well, they did materialize, but they never took off. They never took off. We do have that now. It's still relatively...
Does it work? Is that the problem?
Yeah, it does. It does. But depending on... there are several different technologies, of course.
Right.
Competing for the market that there is. And many of them are only in room. Right, so you can only do it within the room itself. There are others that you might be able to go through a wall or two, right, depending upon things. But I feel that wired connections for HD are always going to be better.
Right,
it's just the way it is, and I feel the same way about Ethernet. A lot of Blu-ray players and TVs now, they have Ethernet and they have wireless dongles that you can then access the apps for Netflix.
It works. I do Netflix via Wi-Fi, mm-hmm, but it is more reliable if you could do Ethernet.
Correct.
I occasionally get rebuffering and I have to start over again.
That's exactly right. So I typically always use wired when I can.
Let's get another one in here from Adrian in Rancho Cucamonga. This is one for me, but you can pitch in if you wish to, because in a way it's for you.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Adrian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. Privileged to be on with both of you at the same time.
We love Scott Wilkinson. He's such a great home theater expert, and it's so much fun. Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is absolutely the reason I jumped on this phone call. I'm looking to get... I currently have the HTC Evo.
Right.
And the new 3D phone...
The Evo 3D.
Oh.
That's evil, if you ask me. I've seen them. In fact, somebody came in here and took a picture of us and said, okay, now you've got to kind of lunge toward the camera to give it a 3D effect, like you're actually moving. I think it's a joke. It's what's called lenticular 3D, so you don't have to wear glasses. That's a good thing.
Right.
Have you seen the Nintendo 3DS, which is not selling like hotcakes?
No, I have seen it.
It doesn't look too good to me.
It's that kind of 3D. Now, some say it really looks good. Some people really like how the 3D look. I just, I'm the wrong guy to ask because I hate 3D in any aspect, and I think a 3D phone particularly is silly. Scott, have you seen them?
I have, and 3D without glasses on a small screen, like
on a phone.
It works
because you're real close to it, and you can position yourself exactly.
Exactly right. It doesn't work very well on a big screen TV.
Right.
The people want to do it. They don't want to wear glasses, but there it is. I think that, as a game device, it's probably a good thing.
But as a phone?
As a phone, I don't see the point.
It does take 3D pictures, which is kind of crazy. So I guess you haven't got a definitive answer, but there's our thoughts. Leo Laporte, Scott Wilkinson, the tech guy. Stay here. It's the number. And today, especially, a good time to call if you've got home theater questions, because Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, is here with us today answering your questions. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. Toll free from the U.S., outside the U.S., you can Skype us. Skype out should be free. So this is a good time if you've got a question. Let's say hi to Jim in Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo.
Good morning, Jim.
Hey, my wife and I both have Droid X's and thinking of going to Italy.
Droid.
Ball.
Droid. You have a Verizon phone.
Correct. Verizon Droid X.
Will not work in Italy.
Understand. But what about Skype and those options?
Skype works great. Not you mean on the phone?
Yeah.
If you can get Wi-Fi, actually, that's a very clever idea. If you can get Wi-Fi on the phone, you can, as most hotels and coffee shops will have, you can make Wi-Fi calls, including video. They look fantastic on the Droid X. 3G will not work.
Okay.
And you wouldn't want it to work because the price would be astronomical. The data roaming is so expensive. So forget calls, forget 3G. Basically, you have, think of it as a Wi-Fi handheld computer.
Skype.
Yeah.
Computer, yeah.
Will we do voice calls or more like text messages?
You could do text messages. You could do voice calls. If you, there's more. If you're just doing text messages, remember, again, you'll have to have an internet connection. So you'll have to be on a Wi-Fi connection. But if you want to do text messages, there's a number of great apps that you can use to message people. I would suggest putting Google Voice on that phone. You've got a Google phone, an Android phone. When you put Google Voice on that phone, you can configure it to make calls, all calls through Google Voice. Actually, Google Voice does not use VoIP, so never mind. I take that back. Google Voice makes an actual phone call. But the text messaging will work, and that will work through the internet. So you can continue to make text messaging from a Google Voice number. People can respond to it at a phone number, and it will go to you, but all of that will be via Wi-Fi.
Okay, what about Google Maps over there? Will those function on the Droid X?
It will only work, again, if you're on Wi-Fi. So what you'll want to do is cache the maps. There's actually you should look for programs that will allow you to download the maps at the hotel so that you can then go out. Your GPS will continue to work. The problem is that you can't, you know, your 3G is not working, so you can't get map information. You can't do lookups. You can't, you know, so you have to pre-cache any mapping that you want to do. Your GPS will work, though.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Jim. Pretty sure it'll work. The GPS itself works. You know, there's kind of a mushed together problem because when you're in the States using your GPS on a smartphone, it does also use data to get in to download information. I don't think that the GPS function requires that data.
You'll get coordinates of where you are.
Right.
You might not get a map, though.
You won't get a map, and that's why you want to cache the maps. And I do believe that that'll tie into the cache.
So I think that's okay.
Of course, Italy has 3G networks. Of course, Italy has phone service. I'm not saying I'm flying that. He's got an Android phone from Verizon, which is a CDMA phone, which doesn't work in Europe. That's the problem. Zach, Tampa, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. Hi, Zach.
Hello.
Hey,
hello.
Zach. How you doing, man?
Hello.
I'm doing good. All right. My question was based on home theater experience. I mean, like, I'm one who can, like, just learn quickly and wire things up. But my question is, like, is there technically a difference between quality for, like, coaxial audio, you know, like, outputting from your set-top box to a receiver to, like, and optical audio? Is there any difference?
Some coax is digital, actually.
All coax is digital.
Yeah.
Basically, coax, the output of a Blu-ray player or a set-top box that's coaxial digital audio and optical digital audio are identical in terms of the data that they send.
The bits going out are the same.
It's just how are they being sent? Are they being sent as electrical pulses or as optical pulses? Now, there is some question, some argument, some debate, shall we say, over which one is better. Certainly the
data is the same.
The data is the same. Absolutely.
So why would there be merit for one over the other?
Well, some people claim that there's an issue, a difference in what's called jitter, which is delays in the packets. All the data, the audio data that is being sent on both systems is sent in discrete packets. And if those packets are not timed properly and reassembled properly, then you might have some problems. And there are those that claim that I think it's coax. They claim has more jitter potential, shall we say, than optical.
Yeah, I've noticed, like, usually whenever I turn on or turn off a ceiling fan, the audio will, like, just fade out and fade back in real quickly on my system.
Using a coax connector.
Yeah, using a coaxial connector.
Well, this may be because of electrical interference, and this is what I was going to say, that the real difference, the primary difference between coax and optical is that optical is completely and totally immune from any electrical interference, whereas coax, being an electrical signal, has the potential to have some problem with electrical interference. Which is why I tend to use optical when I can, because you can run that cable directly across power lines and other things, and, you know, your refrigerator can kick on, or your ceiling fan can kick on, or your AC can kick on. It won't do anything to that signal. Now, I will say also that coax and optical both can only carry standard Dolby Digital or DTS. It cannot carry the enhanced new audio codecs of Dolby True HD and DTS HD. The only way, well, there's two ways to get the full resolution of those formats from your Blu-ray player, which is really all they're going to come from, to your system. One is by HDMI, and the other is by the multi-channel analog outputs on the Blu-ray player, if it has them. And the Blu-ray player then needs the ability to decode those formats and send them by analog to your AV receiver. So the Blu-ray player needs multi-channel analog outs. It needs the ability to decode DTS HD and Dolby True HD. And the receiver needs multi-channel analog inputs, which most modern receivers, at least at the moderate to higher levels, do. Those are the ways you can get these high-resolution audio formats from Blu-ray coax and optical digital audio are only going to give you the standard lossy surround formats. But to avoid electrical interference, I go with optical.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Zach. Excellent. Appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in. I think we have time for Ellie in Hawaii. Hi, Ellie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ellie is our regular who does a great site called GiantDolphin.com, Hawaii Through Our Eyes. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Ellie.
How are you guys?
Fantastic. Welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
Okay, my question is, I heard that CBS is going to make it so that when the first run show is on, you won't be able to watch it online. You're going to have to wait 8 days.
That sounds like something CBS would do. You know, this is a big problem. You know, Hulu was designed by Fox and NBC to make it possible to watch shows, limited commercial interruptions on the internet. I think all of these networks have kind of chickened out at this point, and they're very nervous that people... I guess it was too successful. And people started watching. They don't make as much money on the internet shows.
No, that's true.
And people started watching on the internet more than they were watching on their TV. So I wouldn't be surprised to hear that. I have to check. So what's your question?
Well, I heard ABC is going to follow suit on this.
I'm sure they will.
If they're going to wait 8 days, the next one is going to be on before you can watch the first one.
Why do you think they made it 8, not 6?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that ridiculous?
It's stupid.
Yeah, thank you so much. And, you know, this is the same thing the movie companies are doing.
Yeah.
They won't let DVDs, they won't let Netflix, for instance, have a movie until the DVD's been out a month.
Right.
They're just scared. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy all day today. Your home theater questions more than welcome at 8888 Ask Leo. Jeff's on the line from Laverne, California. Hi, Jeff. Welcome.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I got something that's just perfect for Scott here.
Hey, Jeff. All right.
Okay, I bought a house recently, and the prior owner had put an addition in an area where there was a vaulted ceiling and made a bedroom of it upstairs right over the living room downstairs. When they did that, they ran wires for speakers in the ceiling, and what I have is holes in the ceiling with little wires sticking out of them. What I was thinking of doing is putting in-wall speakers in those locations, but my concern is the bedroom above it hearing everything that's going on the TV downstairs.
Well, that is a very interesting problem and a good concern. There are certain types of in-wall or in-ceiling speakers that have what is called a back box, okay? A speaker, as you probably know, consists of typically a circular, conically shaped diaphragm that vibrates and produces sound. A lot of in-ceiling speakers and in-wall speakers, you just stick them in the wall or the ceiling and they vibrate and the sound goes into the room, but it also goes into the cavity of the wall or the ceiling, which could very well then start broadcasting that sound into your bedroom above the home theater. But some in-wall, in-ceiling speakers have what's called a back box, which is basically like a speaker you would have on your bookshelf that has an enclosure, a fully enclosed enclosure, if you will. And that probably would be a much better solution for you because it prevents the sound coming off the back of that vibrating diaphragm from escaping into the space between the floors and would greatly reduce the amount of sound leaking into the bedroom upstairs, as it were. So I would say I can't think off the top of my head of any brands in particular that have back boxes, but a lot of companies offer them. So you would want to do some research on that. I think it's a great idea to put in-ceiling speakers in these places where you've got wires anyway. Why not? The only problem, and what I would recommend you think about, is this is a fine solution for the surround channels, the back and side channels. It's not as good for the front channels because you want the sound from the speakers to come from the same general plane as the screen and the image is coming from. If you're looking at something straight ahead of you, but the sound is coming from above you, especially in the front, where our directional acuity is much greater, then that's a bit of a cognitive dissonance. And so I don't normally like putting the front speakers in the ceiling.
Should be really right in front of the screen.
Right next to the screen.
Next to the screen.
And it's worse. The worst situation is...
Should they be in the middle of the screen or the top of the screen?
That doesn't matter as much.
Just close to the screen.
Just close to the screen. The worst situation is putting the center channel in the ceiling.
Right.
Because that is what's carrying the dialogue.
Like, and everybody will be talking from above.
From above. It's like, you know, the voice from above.
So that mostly time I see center channels like right under the screen in the middle.
Oh, and Jay in the chat room says also the carpet in the bedroom might deaden the sound somewhat as well.
Right.
And that's a good point as well.
Yeah, we do that here in the studio. Everything. We got books. I put bookshelves, carpeting, mm-hmm. and curtains.
Because you've got, what, a restaurant or something next door.
Yeah, we did. We actually had to put soundproofing drywall. There is apparently a drywall that will do a soundproofing.
Yes, absolutely.
And they have a karaoke night in there. And it, apparently it's working because I don't hear anybody singing. I don't know about you.
No, I don't hear any right now. Last night, we had some dinner here late last night, and we did hear some thumping bass coming from next door.
It came through.
It did. But it was pretty loud.
Yeah, they keep it pretty loud over there. So thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Hope that helps you, Jeff, with your problem a little bit. John from New Jersey, we're going to get you on in just a second. He wants to talk about something you can do with ham radio you can't do with cell phones.
Mm.
As you know, we're having an open house in our studio, and one of the things that we've done is built an incredible, I call it analog radio corner, with a ham set and some beautiful ham radios from ICOM. So we'll talk about that in just a second. Hey, John, Leo, the tech guy. W6TWT, go ahead. Are you there, John?
Yeah, I'm here.
That's a typical ham reaction, nothing.
I'm watching on the computer, too. So
that'll confuse the heck out of you. Yeah, so, yeah, turn off that computer sound, because, of course, the computer's a lot later than we are.
Yeah. My thing is, congratulations on your studio and joining our fabulous hobby.
I love this hobby. You know, I just got my general license on Friday, so
right. I wanted to use
those high-frequency radios that ICOM gave us, the 7800, so you need to have a general license to do that, and that's mm-hmm. the worldwide band where you can go all over the world.
So now I'm still only a tech.
And you enjoy the hobby? Do you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, I've been since 86.
You must have started when you were a kid.
No, I'm actually probably about a year older than you.
Oh, all right. You know, we have the number of older hams here who have been doing it for 50 years. It's not uncommon,
wow.
At least in those days, to start in their teens.
Yeah, sure.
Bob Heil, our Heil microphone guy, who's a very well-known ham. In fact, he got started in microphones by making ham microphones.
Right.
Started when he was 16 in 1957. He says, that was my college education. He didn't have to go to college. He learned so much by talking to hams around the world, learning all the electronics. It's a fun hobby, I have to say.
Yeah.
So what do you think, what can we do with ham radio that you can't do with a cell phone?
Okay, you've been having fun with holding a phone up saying, I can do this with the cell phone and this. But the big thing you can do with a ham radio that you can't do with a cell phone, you don't need a 2-year contract.
You're right. There are limitations. You know, the ham band is really designed for hobby and for fun. You can't do business over it. You can't. For instance, they give us an example. If I call, call in on the ham set, I'm out with my handy talkie in the car and I'm stuck in traffic. I can't call in the ham set and say, by the way, tell Lisa I'll be late for work. No, that's a no-no.
Really?
Yeah, it's only for a personal conversation.
Is there like a police force that's going to enforce that?
There's an unofficial police force because the FCC regulates all ham radio. But
sure.
there's a volunteer police force. In fact, some of the hams here today are on that police force. We'll keep an eye on the ham bands because everybody wants everybody to play fair and play right so that it's available to all of us.
Sure.
But it is amazing. There are other things. Actually, even more important, John, you know, if there is a disaster, and we saw that with Katrina, we mm-hmm. saw it in Alabama with the tornadoes, we'll probably see it sometime soon in California with earthquakes.
Sure.
The first thing that goes is the cell phone and the internet,
mm-hmm.
and it's ham radio operators who very often are the ones who are doing the rescue operations.
Still have the ability to communicate.
Yeah, so it's more than just a hobby, but it sure is a great hobby. John, I thank you for the call. 73. What's your call sign, John?
KB2BJK.
KB2B. Say again.
Kilo Bravo 2 Bravo Julia Kilo.
Good. We'll see you on the air.
Okay.
73. Thanks, John. It's really fun to
all this talk and seeing all this. Maybe you want to do this.
This might be my next hobby. See, you're an electronics guy. You understand electronics, yeah. And it gives you a deeper understanding in some really interesting ways of electronics.
As you said before, Bob Heil, learned electronics from
this. Exactly. That makes it a lot of fun.
Sure.
I think we have time for let's see if we can squeeze one more in before the news at the top of the hour. Go to Georgia. Say hi to Joe. Joe, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, Leo, nice talking with you again. I'm the one, in fact, I'm glad Scott was there, because I'm the one about a year ago that asked the question about, can you have too great of a high-def signal?
Too great of a high-def signal?
Can it be overdriven?
Scott sort of verified me out by telling everybody that the T-wave could get messed up if you pump too much of a signal into the television. My question, though, today is a real quick question about Android phones. I'm visually handicapped, almost total. I'm looking, and a simple yes or no will suffice if you know this, because okay. I'll go. If there's a dialer that you can enlarge the dialer that'll cover most of the...
For Android phones, a big button dialer. I don't know off the top of my head, Joe, but hang tight, because I know our chat room will have an answer for you when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, because, well, frankly, why would you talk about anything else when
why?
You've got somebody like Scott Wilkinson in studio, editor-in-chief of, no, I'm sorry, no longer editor-in-chief, he's now online editor
yep.
of the Home Theater magazine, hometheater.com, and always a welcome guest in our studio. We love having Scott in here.
And the first time in the new studio, which is just gorgeous.
Well, I'm already planning my vacation, Scott, so I hope you'll be,
I'll be here.
Able to come back
you
and do
bet.
The show for me
you bet.
In a few weeks.
Happy
maybe,
to.
Maybe a month or two. I feel like I need to take a little time off after building this incredible studio.
Oh,
if you hear
yeah.
a little burble behind us, we are having an open house in the Tech Guy Labs, the brand new Tech Guy Labs. Our official opening is this weekend. And because we have an amazing ham radio station... in here, we've invited all the Bay Area ham radio operators to come and visit and use our gear, and they are doing that. I'm W6TWT, that's my call sign, but we're using the Redwood Empire DXers club sign for this event so that people can use all of the frequencies that they like to use. Really fun in here. It's just a blast. And
oh,
we're
yeah.
gonna have a kind of a, we bought a disco ball.
I saw the disco ball last night. It
is
so cool. And not only are you shining light on it, but you're also shining one of these water projectors on it.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Which gives you this kind of ripply effect. Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
We have a great guy for lighting, Brent Bai. I know you've
oh, yeah,
got to talk
great.
To him a little bit. And his company in L.A. is OceanStudio.com, and he just does really amazing effects and stuff, and he's done such a good job. Roger Ambrose, I don't know if you've met him, but he's here, our designer.
No, I haven't. I can't wait to meet him.
The guy who did this whole beautiful facility, he designed it. But what I always think of it as is that Roger put down a canvas.
Yes.
And that Brent painted with light. And
yes.
the two of them together have made something that is, I think, a work of art.
So truly spectacular.
If you get a chance, if you're ever in the Bay Area... come up and visit in Petaluma, California, the Tech Guy Labs. We call it the Brick House Studios.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 square feet of goodness and cheer and light. And if you're ham,
and
especially.
Geekiness.
And major geekiness. You know, it's fun to hear people talk about, well, what kind of cabling should. I'll have to take you downstairs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went last night. Jammer B brought me downstairs.
There's a couple of miles of cable down there.
Oh, at least a couple miles.
Cat 6, fiber, all sorts of stuff.
Yep.
Mark is our. Oh, before we get to Mark, I did want to mention we had a call right before the break.
Oh, yeah, right.
From a Android user who was nearly blind, not quite blind, but he needed really big numbers on his screen. And I want to thank Cheeto in our chat room. Usually it's the case. The chat room knows how to answer any question.
Yep.
I think of him as my mind externalized,
mm-hmm.
except my mind never was that smart. So Cheeto came up with a program from BK Mobility called Big Dialer.
And
it's a big dialer, big bad dialer. It's $2.14, completely customizable. You can make the buttons as big as you can, as the screen will handle. You can change the contrast. Sometimes that helps in visibility for some
absolutely.
People.
Sure.
If you've got macular degeneration, for instance, you can see it a little bit better in high contrast. So this is a big dialer. that will optimize your screen. And if you've got one of the 4.3-inch screens like a Sprint Evo or a Droid X, boy, you could get those buttons big.
Big.
Real big.
Real big.
We're having too much fun. They're going to knock us off the air for having too much fun. Mark in Redondo Beach, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
Hi, Leo and Scott. I can't think of a better team to help me with the problem I'm having here.
Thank you.
And for starters, you can call me either Mark or M60XU. How's that?
Well, hello, M60XU. I got to get better at remembering call signs.
You know, that's got to be one of the hardest things about being a ham.
Well, I think as you do it, you get better and better. And they just hear, but I just, I got to write them down as I hear them or I don't remember them. Well, that's great, Mark. How long have you been a ham?
I'm afraid to say, actually, I'm about your age, Leo. I've been a ham since 1971.
Wow. That's longer than I've been doing radio. You started as a kid. You're one of those people started as a kid.
I did. Certainly did. That's really ninth grade, yeah.
I've been doing radio for almost that long, but a broadcast radio, but I feel bad that I didn't get into ham sooner because it's so much fun. And
well, I can just tell you that as a kid, and, you know, we've come so far with communications now. But even as a novice, as a kid, when you made those contacts on CW or Morse code, even 5-10 miles from your house, and to actually talk with someone, the rush that came over you was just amazing.
I still had that. Yesterday, I made contacts with Ray Novak from ICOM. He was at a hamvention in Huntsville, Alabama. We did it over
a hamvention.
We did it over or ham fest, I think is what they actually call it. We did it over a D-Star, which is one of these hybrids. There are a lot of hybrids now, where you make a radio analog radio call to a repeater in the area, which then sends it via the internet to a repeater near Huntsville, which then picks it up and sends it over radio. So the quality was spectacular. And this is a lot of hams are getting now into this kind of hybrid internet radio combination.
Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose a little bit, though?
What's the purpose?
Well, to communicate.
Tell me what the purpose is.
I thought it was to communicate over the airwaves.
Well, it can be that. It's to use technology in interesting ways.
I suppose.
There are a number of internet relay linking protocols out there that are very cool. There's the Wind System. Yeah. There's Echo Link and D-Star, and these are all kind of interesting. And they use VoIP, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Mark, I hope I get a chance to talk to you on the radio sometime.
Oh, we will, Leo.
See, the point is, I'm talking to him right now.
Yeah.
On the phone, but it's cooler to talk on the radio.
Sure,
that's all.
Sure.
I share your. I tell you, I was just as thrilled with that call yesterday to Huntsville, Alabama.
Sure.
As anything. So you're right, Mark. There's a certain excitement to it.
A real thrill. Okay, the topic I called about, it's really important, so I hope we have a few minutes.
We will take some time, and if I have to take a break, we'll just have you hang on for a little bit.
Thank you, and you are the team. Here's the deal. I'm, as you know, a ham, but I'm also a musician and an audiophile, so I think I have a good ear. I just ventured recently into my first digital television experience. I don't know if I can mention the provider.
Oh, I like it. Hey, is this Mark West?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I know another ham named Mark West. Okay, go ahead. who's your digital provider?
It's ATT Uverse.
Actually, I love hearing the names because we want to collect information about
Absolutely.
Who does a good job and who
Absolutely.
Doesn't.
Well, let me give you the rundown. I'll try to be succinct as possible. And it's really a two-part issue. One is I'm having serious audio issues. And two is their support is just burying my problems and pretending that there's no problem, and I've had over 12 service calls.
Wow. What is the audio issue you're having?
Here is the audio issue. And see, again, that's why I tell you it's my first venture into digital television, because this may just be the nature of the beast.
It might well be. It might well be, because they have to compress heavily, right?
True enough.
And maybe because you have a finely tuned ear as a musician, you notice the compression.
More so than most consumers might.
Leo and Scott, to me, it's the opposite of compression. See, FM radio is highly compressed, and you get a nice level signal from, you know, morning to night. The problem is here. I'll go down the list. First of all, the volume level is very low in general. And I say that by comparing all of their TV channels to their preview channels, which come in blasting. Okay, that's issue one. Issue two is you go from channel to channel to channel, and there's these enormous volume swings from channel to channel. Issue three, the old classic commercials come on blasting you out of your room.
That seems to be happening, by the way, more than ever. It's happening on my Comcast cable, too. And it's not loudness, it's presence, you know, heavy mid-range.
And despite the passage of the Calm Act by Congress, we should continue this.
Oh, we will. Mark, hang on the line, because the chat room's weighing in, too, and they have some impressions and solutions, so hang in there. Leo Laporte, Scott Wilkinson, we're talking today, tech today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. We're answering your questions at 888 Ask Leo, and we're having a great time. And we're on today, as always, on Sundays on KGO in San Francisco. And if there are any hams in the North Bay listening to KGO, listening to the show, and you want to stop by, the
Today's
Brick House
the day
studio
to do
is open. We're having our open house, and you're more than welcome to come by and take a look at the great ICOM gear. And Bob Heil and Gordo West, legendary hams, are here with a bunch of others and signing autographs and saying hi. And we're at 140 Keller Street in Petaluma. And you're more than welcome to stop by and say hi. We kind of have an open door policy of the studio, which is...
I mean, there's windows on the street.
It's probably crazy. The nice thing about Petaluma, it's a small town.
Yeah.
So Mark is on the line from Redondo Beach. He's got AT&T U-verse television service, and he's been really unhappy with the levels, the volume of the audio. He says it's very low, and then it's very high. Now, I got to tell you, Mark, that we're getting great agreement in the chat room. They're saying this is a known problem with AT&T U-verse. This is, we've heard about this before. Yes, it is. And Dr. Mom, who's one of our chat regulars in Long Island, who has U-verse, said, all I did was I went on to my Twitter account, and I tweeted, AT&T U-verse, the levels stinks. I don't like it. They're not helping me. And she said they called me right away. They called me right away.
So they're monitoring Twitter, huh?
Sometimes Twitter is a good way to get customer service because, you know, it doesn't seem fair. But if you're on Twitter and you start complaining about a company, many companies monitor Twitter, then often you will get results that you wouldn't get otherwise. They're very afraid of being outed. And you'd think they'd be more afraid of you coming on the Tech Guy show and a million people hearing you're having trouble, but they don't pay attention to us as much as they do, believe it or not, Twitter.
That's amazing. Now, I have to say also that I've heard a lot of complaints about AT&T U-verse that I haven't heard about Verizon Fios.
That's interesting. And did you said you had the choice?
I'm sorry, the choice of what?
Fios versus U-verse. See, this is the problem, is that Fios, fiber from Verizon, isn't in every market. Because you're an AT&T market, usually that means Verizon doesn't have a presence there and Fios won't be available.
It may be.
There's no choice. But could I mention two more characteristics about this problem?
Sure.
The most ones, actually.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, some of the channels are very low in volume and the swings are so high that when you're on the movie channel... sometimes my TV has to be up full blast, and it's, you still can't hear dialogue. But then when a gunshot or an explosion or something.
Yeah, it's a problem, Mark, and it's apparently a fixable problem on AT&T's side, although, Scott, he could put some audio processing in, I guess.
Well, this is the next thing I was going to ask. Do you have the AT&T U-verse box connected to an AV receiver?
Oh, I've gone through all different, it doesn't matter. I go through coax, I go through RCA, I go through HDMI. It makes no difference.
Well, the reason I ask is that there are some receivers more and more these days that have something that normalizes volume. So Odyssey dynamic volume, Dolby volume, THX has one too, that aim to primarily solve the problem of the difference in level between the program and the commercial, or the difference in level between one channel and another. And what you're describing is an extreme case of that. And so if you had a receiver with one of these volume normalizing features on it, that may very well be something that would help quite a bit.
Okay, one of my televisions, it's a Sony Vega, I believe, a very
Vega. Vega is how it's pronounced.
Yeah. Isn't that a tube TV, though? Did they make...
I think so. They also made some rear projections under that name.
So it's an older TV.
It's a CRT, but the audio is phenomenal on the...
Oh, so you're listening to the sound of the TV speakers themselves.
Well, again, it doesn't matter. I listen through a TV. I listen through a stereo. I listen through an HDMI connection. It doesn't matter. But what I was going to say is the Vega has a setting in it called audio leveling or something like...
Oh, okay.
And even that doesn't...
It doesn't work. It really makes no difference whatsoever.
You know, one of our chatters, who apparently is a television engineer, said, you know, this is really FCC deregulation. We used to have to do a proof of performance every year, and the FCC cared a lot about the audio levels. And I have noticed that commercials seem much louder than they used to.
I tend to think it's not that
they're actually louder.
No, but that they are more dynamically compressed.
Right.
That the audio spends more of its time at that peak level than it does in the programs themselves.
You mentioned the CALM Act. What's that?
Yeah, the CALM Act. I've forgotten what it stands for. CALM, but it's an act of Congress that purports to legislate
advertisement loudness mitigation.
There it is. It addresses this very issue, and legislates that commercials can't be a bunch louder than the programs. I don't remember when it goes into effect. You might be able to see there.
It was
enacted just last
year, 2008.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The bill passed in 2010, but as usual with those kinds of things, they give people a little time.
Like a couple of years, probably.
On May 27th of this year, the FCC released a notice of proposed rulemaking to implement the CALM Act. Comments are due July 8th. Reply will be July 21st. 12 parties filed comments. They're now online at the FCC's electronic comment filing system.
Mm-hmm.
A report and order adopting the rules will come out around December 15th. So it isn't in effect yet.
So
maybe it'll get better, but I think that the problem isn't decibel level. It's not volume as we know it. It's not me talking louder. It's me talking with a more mid-rangey, piercing voice.
And it's also...
That's
as
why Wolfman Jack cut through the airwaves.
And it's also the commercials spending more time at that high level as opposed to programs where sometimes it's soft, you know?
Well, you want a dynamic range.
You want a dynamic range, absolutely.
And it's also an effect of the fact that nowadays we're listening on better speakers. We're hearing it better than we used to.
Yep.
And I think we're more aware of it. You know, I have better speakers because I have a better TV, and so I pay more attention. And when you have good speakers with some amplification on them and it gets really loud, you can hear it.
Oh,
holy moly. Joe in Georgia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Leo. I was waiting to ask my second question.
Oh, we already talked. That's right. But go ahead and ask that second question.
Yeah, but I am in total agreement with the gentleman that was just on the phone. In fact, it's not just cable channels that are doing this. It's regular TV stations also.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And the steady sound will not work well. I have two Bravias, and I've tried to use that on both TVs, and it's just like, it's not even there, you know. But my second question to you... could you repeat what the website was for me, or where the place was to go for that big dialer?
Yeah, if you know, one of the great things about Android in the first place is you can go to
This is my first Android phone. My wife got one, and it was buy one, get one free. This is a new...
Good, so you're new to this. Well, I'll give you a really handy tip that everybody who has an Android phone should know. You can install software from the web, and this for you, especially if you have vision problems, might be a real boon. You can install software directly from the web to your Android phone. Go to market.android.com and search for Big Dialer. You'll find it. Then you'll be logged into your Google account, press install, and it'll automatically... tell your phone, install this software, you're done. You don't even have to connect it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. Poor Joe. Every time I pull him up and we talk to him, we end up talking about something besides his question, because he does have a home theater question. Leo Laporte here with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater expert. And we're taking all kinds of questions, but especially home theater questions today. We'd love it if you'd call 888-ASK-LEO. So, Joe, I was just saying that that's one of the neat things about Android, since you're new to the platform. Unlike the iPhone, where you have to you can download apps from the iPhone directly using the iTunes App Store. Mm-hmm. You can put them on your computer and then sync your iPhone. But on Android, you can do it kind of hybrid, where you go to the website, market.android.com. You pick an application, Big Dialer. You press install, and it will just signal the phone, download and install this. And next time you use your phone, there it is.
Mm.
It's a really nice feature. I really like it. But I know you had a home theater question, Joe.
I got the new new Motorola Droid that just came out with a 4-inch screen, so I'm pretty good as far as screen size.
Yeah, the big screen will make a big difference for you, especially with this big dialer. You should be able to get pretty big buttons on that.
I can barely use it as it is now, so even just a little bigger will help me. But
there
anyway, the video question is this. Do they have any more, have they made any more improvements, Scott, on the MOSFET amps that they use in the better receivers or since like the early 2000s?
So he's talking about solid-state receivers. A lot of people still, to this day, and there's a few of them out in the other room, say, oh, there's never going to be anything as warm and smooth and nice as a tube
as
amp.
Tube amps.
Well, I might would agree, but...
that is, there's certainly a lot of people who agree with you, and tubes certainly do sound different than solid-state. There's no question about it. Primarily...
Is that warmer? Is that
it is. That's what everybody describes
smoother?
It as. Smoother, warmer. It's because...
There is a massive psychological component to this.
Yes. But
you think it's going to sound better, it will sound better.
Well,
it's kind of like spending a lot of money on something, and it's
right.
Like, well, I know this is going to sound better because I spent a lot of money
this
on
is
it.
Precisely my argument about super expensive cables. You know, people say, oh, I just spent $10,000.
They gotta justify it.
Yeah, exactly.
The only way I would say that you could tell if this is really true is a blind A-B comparison.
That's right.
And sometimes these things are quite surprising. I know that was for me when we did this MP3 comparison with Dolby.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell the difference. So if you put on a blindfold and you get your buddy of course you'd have to have a tube amp and a solid state amp.
You'd
have to have the same material pumping through it.
Now another factor there though is whether or not the listeners are experienced, whether they know listen for.
That's true, because you can, on the surface, think it sounds the same.
Right.
But if you listen to a particular tone or sound or feeling, you may well be able to tell the difference.
Now, I will say in answer to the question that solid-state amps have improved over time greatly. And not only do we have what are called Class AB amps in quite a few receivers, which is a technical term. It means how they amplify things on the positive and negative sides of zero. There's also now what are called Class D or digital amps. That's a misnomer in some technical instance, but I'm just going to call it that for now, just for sake of argument.
As they used to be, because I know when digital first came out, if you made a mistake with your speakers or something like that, it pretty much fried the system.
Well, you know, if you mismatch the speakers to the amp in terms of impedance, that can certainly happen. You want to make sure that the amp can drive the speaker with a given impedance, which is its resistance to electrical current. But the sound quality of digital and what we call Class AB used to be dramatic, a difference between them, and that is becoming less and less, too. Class D digital amps are getting better and better. Some people are really liking that sound now. Pioneer uses it in their higher-end receivers. Quite a few companies are now using Class D, so that difference is getting a little bit less as time goes on. And Class AB, MOSFET, solid-state, analog amps are getting better, too. There's just a different quality between solid-state and tube amps. There is some justification for it. The second-order or even-order harmonics are emphasized more in tube amps than they are in solid-state. So solid-state is more clinically accurate.
Mm.
But just like home speakers are often voiced to not be perfectly flat, Because it sounds better, because most consumers like an EQ curve to them.
Right.
The same thing is true of valve amps. Valve.
That's the old British
term for tubes. Tube amps as opposed to solid state.
We got a valve transmitter out here.
Oh, man. They turned that thing on last night.
Isn't that beautiful? It's a little loud. We were talking about it earlier in the show. It's part of the ham corner, the old radio. We had a tribute to analog radio.
It's amazing.
Stuff. Although the ham stuff now is all digital.
Yeah.
But this old AM transmitter, you can broadcast on 75 meters on the ham bands.
Mm-hmm.
And what they told me is, but if you're going to do that, you got to get a tube receiver to hear the difference. But they do say you will hear it sounds so much better.
So much better with tubes.
Even on AM, using amplitude modulation, it sounds better.
Right.
You know? So
those tubes that are in that transmitter, by the way, they're gigantic.
Yeah, they're
and
classics.
And they glow. Yep. It's really cool.
Yeah, they're classic. I can't wait to use that. I will be using that at some point to broadcast.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, transmit. You know, what we're doing now is broadcasting.
Broadcasting.
One to many or two to many.
Right.
And what you do on the on the ham bands is transmit. I have to keep practicing the difference.
Is that one-to-one?
It's one-to-one, yeah.
Yeah.
You can have what they call a net, where you have a bunch of hams all on the same frequency talking together.
Mm-hmm.
That's more
sort of
like
a chat room.
Chat room. Or Caffey Clatch. Ken in California, Leo Laporte, Scott Wilkinson. We're talking home theater and tech. Hi, Ken.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
And I understand you are an installer.
I am.
Ooh, love to hear your thoughts about running HDMI versus component. We were talking about that last hour.
I run both in case I have handshake problems.
There you go.
Handshake is the issue.
Exactly what I said earlier, yeah.
All right. So it's a fallback position. You can go to component if you can't get it working.
Once the sheetrock goes up, you triple the price.
Yes, indeed.
Now, you had an answer for our caller who had problems with the sound going through the floor.
Back boxes are really a way to meet fire code and to create an enclosure for the woofer.
Exactly.
Might work against you, but there is a product from a company. Can I say their name?
Yeah.
Dynamat, DynaMat. Now, what Dynamat makes is a rubberized back box that you can literally crumple it up in your hands and stick it up inside the ceiling, and it opens up into a back box that stops reverse wave from going up to the next floor.
Really?
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that before.
Dynamat.com. They're a wonderful company. It's a really good product. It's designed to solve a problem, exactly the one you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't unusual. I guess especially if you lived in an apartment, this would be a real issue, wouldn't it?
Oh, crucial. If it's a condo or an apartment, I definitely push this thing because it works.
You know, I'm familiar with Dynamat because, wait a minute, is that right? This looks like when you're overhauling your ride, this looks like a car.
Yeah, but if the quiet sound, better sound quiet living tab, and you click on that, what you're looking for is
I see, home acoustic solutions. I am a little familiar with this because we've used it in the past to also reduce sound in studios. So this
it really works.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Dynamat.com. Any other questions for the installer, as long as we got one on the horn here?
This is great information.
Talk about even harmonics versus odd harmonics, but you stole my thunder.
really good to have you, Ken. Please, you know, anytime if you're listening and you hear me make a stupid error, Scott has permission to do this too. Just call in and we'll get you on.
Well, I'm going to come down there and visit you guys one of these days.
Please do. Where are you in California?
I'm in Healdsburg.
You're just a few miles away. You come down now and you say hi to Scott.
Yeah, please do. Drop on by.
If you can get away from the installer business. 8888-ASK Leo. That's the number. Scott Wilkinson's here, our home theater wizard. We'll take more of your calls in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
The home theater guy.
It's a very musical show.
Indeed.
We're taking your questions about technology in general and home theater specifically, if you've got any. This is a great time. When Scott's in studio, we really like to take those questions for home theater stuff because people are so interested. Big screen TVs, surround sound.
Oh, yeah. Especially, you know, when you go out to theaters these days, to the movies, it's so expensive.
Yeah, it's kind of the point where it almost makes sense to buy a home theater.
It does. You know, money. You amortize that over a couple of years, and you don't have a kid kicking your seat from behind.
It's a nice experience, although I find I do watch more TV now. I fire up Netflix every night now, you know, the streaming, and I sit there and I watch much more TV. But I do have my computer in my lap, and I do a little bit of work while I'm
there. Are you able to multitask?
I can't
do it.
Well, you're smart, because I miss a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm not always looking at the screen, and things will happen. I'll go, what? Who? Hi?
I've got a friend, my essentially niece, who's just gone off to graduate school, and I asked her about that, because youngsters today seem to be able to multitask and do three or four things at once. And I asked her about that, and she said, yeah, I do that. I can't just sit there and watch TV. I've got to have a computer there. I've got to be doing some email or some Facebook or one thing or another, and I'm going to be doing this or that. And I just can't believe that as much information gets in and gets retained when you're doing that. And
yet, that's just because you're an old fart.
I'm an old fart, I know.
The kids today are amazing. They can understand anything. They actually have done studies that say that multitaskers think they understand more, but don't.
Yeah.
But I've also seen studies that say that teenagers really can't absorb that much. I think they're turning themselves into ADD, you know.
Well, I don't know. On the other hand, this Maya Wilson, my niece here, is on her way to graduate school to get her PhD. She graduated,
Very smart.
Super high at UCLA, so she's doing something right.
John in Folsom, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater expert. Hey, John. Oh, I didn't push.
Hey there.
Yeah, there he is.
There's only one set of multi-channel inputs on any given receiver. Is there a switch box you can get, a higher end one?
Yes.
What is a multi-channel input?
A multi-channel input is on many receivers these days. We were talking about this a little earlier. There's a 5.1 or a 7.1, which is to say a 6-channel or an 8-channel input, which is basically 6 or 8 actual RCA jacks on the back of an AV receiver that you can connect 6 or 8 separate cables from a Blu-ray player into that receiver. And that lets you get these high-definition, high-resolution audio formats of Dolby, True HD, and DTS HD directly into your receiver, not by using HDMI. You can bypass HDMI. So if your receiver doesn't have HDMI, then this is the only other way to get those high-resolution audio signals into your receiver so that you can hear them. But virtually all audio receivers only have one set. So what if you have more than one thing that has these multi-channel analog audio outputs? Well, you need a switcher, and these switchers are certainly available. I haven't gone shopping for them or studied them or reviewed them at all, but they're pretty simple. You should be able to do that without too much trouble. Companies that do it, let me see if I can find them online real quick here. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I don't know what the quality is of it, because they're basically, you know, video audio switchers. But if you take two and run, go to the ins and then to the outs, it'll give you another set.
I'm sorry, say that again?
He's got a Radio Shack switch that'll do that.
Well, that should do it. A company called Zektor, Zektor, makes a variety of kinds of switchers that I haven't actually tried myself, but I've heard good things about, so I'd have to say that's probably one place I would certainly look.
Okay, Zektor.
Oh, another company is Atlona, A-T-L-O-N-A. I'll be seeing them next month at the Cedia show, and I intend to have some discussions with them about what their switchers offer. We need a new switcher. Actually, we need a new HDMI switcher in our testing lab that allows 3D to pass through, because we review a lot of 3D TVs, and we need the ability to switch from one source to another and to distribute to multiple TVs so that we can look at three or four TVs next to each other all showing the same content and compare them one to the other.
Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to go travel down memory lane with you, Scott. Bill in Ohio has a question. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru.
Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Whiskey 6, Tango, whiskey, tango. How do you copy?
I copy you great.
Yankee Quebec Lima from Ohio.
Well, hello, Yankee Quebec Lima. It's great to talk to you. There's, you know, there are so many hams. They really come out of the woodwork.
They do.
When
it's
you amazing. Come out of the closet, they go, well, yeah, I'm a ham. Are you an active ham still, Bill?
Oh, yeah, we've been doing it, and we're very active. Leo, I want to mention to you, Leo, and to Scott, too, that I don't know if you guys are aware of the fact that there in California, in your state, you got the biggest and baddest D-Star network of anywhere in the whole world.
I kind of gathered that, and I'm definitely going to spend some time on D-Star. Is that what you use, Bill?
Oh, yeah, exclusively, pretty much. About on D-Star all the time. And tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time Zone, Leo, at the, I believe, 6 o'clock Pacific time, your time zone, we have a D-Star skin in that that's being held on your reflector 12A right there in the Papa system in California. And we'd love to have you to pop in there for a guest speaker tonight if you'd happen to have time.
I will endeavor to make that. We were having kind of a party at 7, our grand opening party.
You're going to be a little busy.
And I
got
to put on my tuxedo, but if I can, Bill, I will. What's your call sign again?
Kilo Charlie 8 Yankee Quebec Lima KCAYQL, and I'm right here in pretty close to Defiance, Ohio.
Now, you wanted to ask a question about the Roxy Theater. What is that?
Yeah, we're going to see if Scott remembers Bobby Hiles' Roxy Theater with James, the butler in the box that does it all.
Wait a minute, Bob Hiles, get Bob Hiles in here, because Bob Hiles just, I'm looking at him right.
He's right on the other
right
side of the window here, yeah.
Now, Bob, people don't know this, Bob Hiles, of course, does all of our microphones. He's a very well-known ham. In fact, does a ham show on our network called Ham Nation.
That's right. He was a guest on my podcast, too.
He's a great guy, and he's standing right behind
you. Hang on
you.
A second. I'm going to give him my chair for a second.
Give Bob the mic, because he's here. And he also, and people don't know this, is a well-known theater organist. He plays theater organs. So Bill, I'm going to get Bob to put on the headphones here. Now, ask that question again.
Cool. Okay, hello, Robert. Do you copy KC8YQL, Bob?
I do. Hello there.
This is Bill Satellite, actually, from Continental Ohio, and I missed you this year at Dayton. You didn't show me all those neat, cool pictures of all them home theater installs.
Well, you were a home theater installer in the early days, weren't you?
In the
early
days.
Satellite
absolutely.
Dish dealer and all of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We did a lot of stuff in the early days. Uh-huh.
Put you on the spot with these guys, Bob, and ask them if they remember the butler in the box, Mr. James, at the Roxy Theater.
Well, I still have a butler in the box working.
You got to tell me what that is.
The butler in the box was an amazing thing. It was early home automation, and it was voice automation, where you could come in and operate all X10 devices, and it would recognize your voice, and you didn't have to tell it who you were. You just walked in, and ours said, "Hello, James," and it would know it was me, and it would turn on things the way I
would. I wish we had that. I bet it works.
It's
not,
really
not
slick.
So well, but we'll find out. Hey, thanks, Bill. Hey, thanks, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. This is fun. We're having a little party. Scott Wilkinson has been demonstrating the vuvuzela. Scott takes pride in the fact that he can play any wind instrument made.
Yep.
Even that.
Even the vuvuzela. Give me an instrument with more than one note at a time, completely lost. I have no idea what I'm doing.
One note at a time.
One note at a time.
That's what we call him, old one note at a time Wilkinson. Scott is better known as the expert on home theater at hometheater.com. He's their online editor. And, of course, he joins us every week to talk home theater on Sundays. But I'm very pleased to say he's spending all day with us today.
It's so really happy nice. To be here, yeah.
As part of the grand opening of our Tech Guy Labs, our new studios. We call it the Brick House Studios in beautiful Northern California, Petaluma, California. And if you come by, and especially if you're a ham, you come by today and we'll get you on the ham channels, because we got our beautiful radio set up here, the AM radio corner with the Collins AM transmitter and the ICOM radios, thanks to Ray Novak of ICOM. And we're just having a blast. So you ready for some more calls, Scott?
You bet.
Home theater questions more than welcome at 8888-ASK-LEO. And our next caller is from Irvine, California, listening to the great KFI in Los Angeles. It's Bruce. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Very well. Welcome to the show.
I figured out I can multitask. I was playing Angry Birds, so hey, this is great. I could listen to you guys, hold the phone, and I can multitask.
I think that's what Angry Birds was made for, actually.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think so, for being on hold.
Being on hold and waiting in line at the DMV, those two things.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Leo, I got a GPS question for you. This is the 10th anniversary of September 11th, and I'm going back to New York with my bicycle, and I'm doing a 530-mile bicycle ride.
Oh, isn't that great?
From Ground Zero to Shanksville, where Flight 93 crashed, down to the Pentagon.
Wow.
And the whole thing is a fundraiser for disabled vets, you know, that have been injured in the war. So I set up a real basic website for people to read about the ride that I'm doing. I'm doing it with a bunch of other, I mean, there's like 350 people that are riding. And a lot of people that have been, you know, donating and sponsoring me for the ride have asked, well, I'm going to be able to keep track of you. And I said, well, I just have just a one-page website. Let me call Leo and see if there's a way that on my, can I say the name of the site?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, rideforvets.net.
Rideforvets.net.
.net.
Nice, yeah, also, nice name. And you got 300 people riding with you.
Yeah, and it's all to raise money for disabled vets to help them in their rehabilitation.
What a great idea. And, what a fun ride, too. I mean,
it'll be a great ride all the way through the backcountry there in Pennsylvania, and for a great, great, great cause.
So it's easy to do what you've done, which is to make a static site, of course.
So people can, you know, they can learn about, you know, and then sponsor me on the ride.
But I'm sure you'd love to have a map and a whole lot more going on.
Right. I was wondering, something like that, other than getting a web designer to do it, or is there someplace I can say, where am I now, and they click on that link and it goes to a page that shows where I'm at on a GPS map or something, versus putting it right into my page?
That's an interesting question, actually. Sites, you know, when you first mentioned it, I was thinking of sites like firstgiving.com, which are sites designed for people who want to raise money.
Right, right. And we didn't have any problem with that. They're raising it directly. It's for Ride for Recovery, or Ride to Recovery.
Oh, okay.
And,
so
the proceeds go to them.
That's
so when
great.
You link on my page, it says donate here, and then it goes to the ride to recovery.com page. And
so they're handling the back end on that.
Yeah,
I mean,
that,
it's
so
not such a difficult thing to embed what you really want is what's called a Google Maps mashup, which will take data from one source. Google Maps, Google's been really generous about providing what we call an API, Application Programmer's Interface, a way to take data and mush it into the Google Maps and display a page based on that. So it would be a very simple thing, for instance, to not only have a thing where is Bruce now, but actually have a map that's automatically updating your location.
Right. I mean, can I use my phone GPS, or would I have to actually have a...
No, it would work fine. In fact, Google, you're almost there already, because Google has a program called My Tracks that goes on your Android phone. Apple probably has something similar for the Apple phones.
I have the Android.
Oh, you're in luck. Okay, so My Tracks is a free Google program. You turn it on, it tracks you, and then gives you a track of your travels that you could upload to a Google map. So something very easy to do would be embed a link to your Google Maps on your page, and it would be updated whenever you uploaded that track. You could have each day's track, for instance, uploaded. The chat room's giving me a link, which is a great place to start. You're right. You might want a programmer to help you with this, unless you feel fairly technical. But if you go to maps.google.com/help/maps/getmaps, they've got a whole thing on how to add Google Maps to your website.
Oh, okay. I can take a look at that.
Yeah, and they've got some examples of people who are doing this. Google does, for a non-commercial like this, there's no cost. Google Maps really are great maps. And so it's a very straightforward thing. And I think you could embed it right into that HTML there. There'd be just one or two lines of code. And you could use a tracking program like MyTracks. And I think you're 90% of the way there.
Okay, I can kind of explore around the map.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to give you another one. Echo Echo is telling us in the chat room. And this is a company that or a website that does this specific thing. And my friend Daryl Kitchen, who has a podcast called Hack 5, used it. It's as he traveled across the country. He made a move across the country. It's called Instamapper. And Instamapper.com, if you want to know more about it. It's a free service.
Right.
That allows you to track a GPS-enabled cell phone online in real time.
Oh, okay.
Now, I imagine what would happen, I'm not sure, but is that you would embed this into your website, and then you could have, you know, where you are as you go. So this would be another very easy way to do this. So I don't think you need a programmer if you feel like, you know, you can modify a web page. Sounds like you can, because that's what you did with your original site.
Well, I just did that. It was kind of one of those... like Homestead or something that
okay.
I can
if you
set
feel,
it up.
If you feel kept comfortable embedding, you know, JavaScript into a page or, you know, that kind of thing, uploading a page, I think you could do this. If not, you might want to find somebody who can help you. And I bet you there's quite a few people who would be glad to help you. I mean, it sounds like a great cause. So it's
yeah.
It's the rideforvets.net.
Rideforvets.net. And if anybody wants to support the ride, we would always appreciate it. Every proceeds going to helping the vets.
That's really great. And when are you doing that?
I'm heading out there on the 7th of September, but we start riding right at Ground Zero on September 11th, the 10th anniversary. Then we do the whole route for, you know, all the tragedies occurred. But we have a lot of vets that are riding. And the 350 people that are riding, we have
That's
a lot
so
of disabled vets that have bikes modified for them to ride.
Wow.
Just so they can join in on this and stuff. So it's going to be a great.
I think Instamapper.com would really be exactly what you want, because they actually just do it. All you'd have to do is turn it on your phone, and it would follow you, and it would be live, which is what you want.
Oh, good. Yeah, because a lot of people are saying, well, can we follow you? Can we see what you're doing, where you're at?
They can at least see where you're at. Now, the next step, of course, is start streaming video from your bike, and that's a whole other problem. But you can do that. There are programs for Android phones, Ustream, Justin, QuickQIK.com. All will let you do that live. It's just it uses up some battery and it uses up some bandwidth.
On the front of my bike there, and people can look at me. Riding down, or look at the people in front of me anyway.
Yeah, look at their butts. Hey, thanks, Bruce. Well, I'm thank you for doing that too. I think that's a great idea. I'm sure there'll be a lot of things going on as we hit the 10th anniversary of September 11th. But this sounds like a particularly good one.
You bet.
Scott Wilkinson's here. We'll take more of your home theater questions when we return. In just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson's here, the home theater guru. And we're talking home theater and all sorts of tech today. Our chat room mods are in studio with us, which is nice. We have a really... Oh, they took their hats
off. Doggone it.
They were all wearing twit fezzes. I like the outfits that they were wearing.
Yeah, but, definitely.
I guess once I left the room, they declined to be humiliated any further. And
I like my twit fez.
I know. I'm proud to have a twit fez.
You bet.
They gave up. We are going to invite you to visit our chat room since we have all the mods here. You know, there's, I think, a total of 9 or 10 moderators. Moderators
really?
In the chat room are really important. Because
really important.
The chat room can get out of hand very easily. And these people are so good at keeping a rein on the chats. I know sometimes chatters feel like, well, free speech should rule. Well, not really, because we really want it to be safe for kids to visit. We want everybody to feel comfortable in there. So.
And I think we want people to be respectful as well.
Well, that's true. You know, and they always...
I certainly would like that. Since I'm the one that's the target.
I told the mods, I said, it's okay if people say bad things about me, but not about anybody else. So, not about our guests. So, they're all leaving. Well, what did I say? Did I say, was it something I said?
Wait a second.
Hey, come back here. If you'd like if you'd like to join us in our chat room, it's easy. Just go to our website, techguylabs.com, and you'll see a link on the left there that tells you how to get in the chat, how to watch live video, how to participate in the show. And, of course, our great James Ruvo is writing down everything we say. So you don't have to memorize any of the links we mentioned. Just go to techguylabs.com. I'm having a little trouble with the site. I don't know what happened. We
Yeah, what happened there?
We screwed it up a little bit.
Technology. Can't live with it. Can't throw it out the window.
Oh, I wish we could sometimes. I do. Let's get back to the phones. And we are, by the way, we've already made a deal with Premier Radio Networks. We're going to, as part of the show, do a completely revamped website that we'll invite all of you to participate in. I'm going to call it Team Tech Guy.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll have the questions and answers, each question and answer from the show or each segment that we do with people like you, Scott.
Sure.
And then Team Tech Guy, all of you, can participate by adding to it.
Excellent.
Because I think a lot of times the best answers come from our chatters and
listeners.
It's
true. Well, on the website, the same thing. You know, I do a column called Ask Home Theater where I answer listener and reader questions. But there's always the opportunity for people to add their own comments. And very often, you know, I know a lot of stuff and I say it, but, you know, sometimes I don't know the answer or I know part of the answer and I get answers from readers who contribute their own part to the answer. And I find that to be extremely valuable and very well, taken. So yeah. Thanks for everybody for doing that.
They call it, the tech term for it is crowdsourcing, where you've heard of outsourcing, but this is crowdsourcing, going to the crowd. And it turns out that almost always the crowd knows best. And so that's why I love the chat room. I love your participation from home and the calls. And we hope the website, the new website, will be a really good way for everybody to pitch
in
and answer every question.
Sure.
And at some point, it will reach this, it'll almost be like Wikipedia, where it'll reach this critical mass of content where if there's a question about technology, you can go to the site and you will find it. And you'll find the right answers. Let's get our next call on the line. Kelly in Santa Clarita, California. Kelly, Leo Laporte, Scott Wilkinson, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. My question is about going, you go to the cafe or whatever, and there's the Wi-Fi. And I've been listening to your show, and you say, don't send your passwords, flying around or whatever.
Right.
And then, so you said that, when you look in the little bar where it says the web address, if it says HTTPS, it's secure.
That's right.
Like Gmail or whatever.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I work for my school and I do work, for the kids, and there's a certain website that we need to get on. And it's like when you first, you open the page and it has a place to put your username and password, and that one does not have an S, but then you put the username and password in, and when you press enter, then it says HTTPS, whatever, but then it goes back to being...
Right. That's fine, Kelly. So what's going on there, and this happens with banks sometimes too, you don't get the HTTPS on just the form, but it does get secure when you press the submit. In other words, the page that loaded was not a secure page. But
right.
When you enter the password, it does not send, if it's a well-designed site, and this sounds
right.
like it was, it does not send the password encrypted. I'm really lobbying for all sites to be secure most of the time, because what's happening with this site is it's secure when you send the password, but then it goes back to HTTP.
And so can they still pull stuff off after the password? Because, there's a lot of stuff on there that I wouldn't just want anybody to have access to.
Yes. The stuff after you log in that is being sent through the air is visible.
Okay, so they can just,
they can watch it.
Okay, can they download it or keep it?
No. Well, they can keep it. Yeah, okay, so here's what's happening. You're broadcasting when you're using Wi-Fi. And so somebody who's sitting there with the appropriate software receives it just like they're receiving a radio show. They can record the data, see it another time.
Okay.
They can, yes, absolutely. That data is on their computer and they can do anything with it. There are other issues as well with non-HTTPS connections. Facebook has now turned it on. Google's turned it on. Twitter's turned it on. Many sites now have turned on secure surfing for this very reason. And it's a minimal requirement that the password be sent that way. I agree with you that you want full privacy. If you do, there are ways around it. You don't have to. You can still use an open access spot and, for instance, use a virtual private network or VPN. Our sponsor, Citrix.
That one of those MiFi things?
No. Well, MiFi would be secure. That would be your own personal network, so that would be secure. But let's say you're at a coffee shop. It has an open access spot. You want to use it to surf. What I would suggest is there are services out there where you can purchase virtual private networking. And what happens is you surf to that connection secure, and then from that connection to the outside world, it's unencrypted or whatever the site that you're going to does. So a VPN will protect you at the coffee shop. You can use Citrix has a Go to My PC that's remote access. That's one way to do it, because what you'll do is connect to your computer remotely, surf from your computer. The connection to your computer is protected. But there are other companies that do this too, Hotspot, VPN, and others, for usually less than $10 a month. Will give you that capability. My suggestion is just don't do things at coffee shops that you don't want people to see. Yeah. Most of the surfing we do day to day, big deal.
But I mean, like, because my friend and I, for our thing, you know, we do have our Google, and then we use the whole, you know, you can do the documents and all that stuff. But that's okay, like, because it's the whole site is secure the whole time.
Yeah, Google Docs does HTTP, as I am encouraging every site to do, does full-time HTTPS.
Okay, well, maybe I'll just do that and then not do the other thing.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, if there's something you don't want people to see and you don't see that HTTPS in the address bar, then just know that what you're doing is public, and you may not care, but just know it. And if you do care, don't do it.
Okay.
That's cheaper than buying a VPN or some other solution. Just look for the HTTPS.
Simple as that.
Hey, Kelly, thanks for calling. It's good to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls to come. Scott Wilkinson, too. Leo Laporte here. Scott Wilkinson is also here. He's our home theater guru from Home Theater .com, and usually we get 10 minutes with Scott if we're lucky. Today we're getting 3 hours.
And so happy to be here.
It's really fun to have
it's
you.
It's really fun.
Appreciate
yeah.
it. And I have all the great visitors who are coming from all over the area.
Tons of visitors.
Many hams, too, because we've got this great ham station that we set up for amateur radio enthusiasts, and they're visiting that. And we're just having a blast. So we appreciate everybody who came up to visit. You know, we keep this, my policy in the studio is just have it, you know, so far we've had no problems having an open studio. Anybody wants to come to visit is more than welcome to, and we just kind of think of this as a little bit of geek heaven.
You bet. I'm in heaven.
I'm enjoying it. Natasha's on the line from Corona, California. Hi, Natasha. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, thank you for having me. I had two questions. One of them, if I wanted to make, like, a little website that was similar to Facebook, just not as big, how would I do that?
Like your own personal friends site?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. What do you, what are parts of Facebook do you particularly value? Would you particularly want to duplicate?
Like just the chatting and, like, I don't know, just being able to talk between, like, with the friends instead of it being so big and, like, having, like, 500 friends and stuff, you know?
I like that idea, Natasha. Are you a high school student?
I am.
So most of you and your friends are mostly on Facebook. You're thinking maybe we could have a little private clubhouse. Because I have to say, one of the issues with Facebook is that, they create that site hoping to get you to put as much personal information in there as possible so they can sell your information to advertisers. So you may say, well, it's not really very private. If we want to talk about personal stuff, we're not convinced that it's going to stay personal.
In fact, it probably won't.
In the past, it hasn't, that's for sure. In fact, even Mark Zuckerberg, the guy who founded Facebook, and you'd think the guy who would understand it best, recently got bit by that. He had a bunch of personal pictures on
really?
Facebook, and they changed their privacy policy, and all of a sudden his personal pictures were viewable publicly.
Now,
he changed that quickly, but within a few hours he said, whoa, I don't want everybody to see those pictures. And then said, but everybody, it's okay to, you know, everybody wants to connect and share pictures. I've got nothing to hide. Well, he does. And we all do. And, the thing you should understand, Natasha, is no matter what you do, anything you're putting on the internet is not fully private.
Right.
If you want to really stay private, you should probably talk to people in person. that's okay. But I agree that it'd be kind of nice to have something somewhere in between, where you could at least have some feeling that you owned it and it was kept private because it was your choice. There used to be a company that did this called Ning. They still do it, but they charge now, and it's too bad. It was the whole idea of it was create your own personal social network, and that was a great idea, but I can't really recommend it because it's not free anymore. They decided they wanted to reach out to businesses.
Well, I don't think I would mind paying, like, a little bit.
Well, look at Ning. Maybe you get all your friends to chip in. That would make it worthwhile. Okay. And they have all the features of Facebook. I mean, they're really trying to duplicate Facebook. Another thing a lot of teenagers use, and I know my daughter does, is something called Tumblr, TUMBLR.com. And Tumblr is really designed to make a blog. You might already know about Tumblr blogs, but it has a social element to it as well. People can comment on it, can share posts with other people. It doesn't have chat built into it, but Tumblr would be a good way for you and your friends to share pictures with each other, for instance.
Yeah, okay.
Tumblr's great. My daughter has a Tumblog and really enjoys it. It's, again, remember, it's not, you know, completely private. In fact, a Tumblr site is a public site that people can find, so don't think of it as being completely your own, even if they have a, you know, keep this private. They do have private posts. They do have private blogs that you can invite your friends, family, and coworkers to use. But as soon as you're putting something on the internet, you can kind of assume
that somebody's going to be able to find it.
Might be able to see it, and you just, you know, mistakes happen and so forth. One of our chatters is suggesting BuddyPress. The idea here is it's basically a WordPress site that has social features built into it. Now, this one's completely free. And I think if, Natasha, if you kind of wanted to become a little bit web savvy here and become a web designer, or at least learn some of these skills, this might be a good choice for you as well. It's buddypress.org, and it's based on WordPress. You have to have a server of your own and a host to WordPress installation on that. So a lot of people, you know, don't have their own servers. But then you can make a social network for free right on top of it. See, that's the kind of thing you could probably go to your friends and say, hey, each of us put in a couple of bucks a month, we could have our own website, run BuddyPress or something like it on it, and we have total control over it. And we can make it completely password protected, completely private. That's probably the only way to really say, we own this site. It's on our server. No one can see. Good luck, Natasha. I think that's a really great idea. I like that idea.
I do too.
And it does take a little more savvy, but you know, this is how you learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Stan, Woodland Hills, California. You're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome, Stan.
Welcome, Leo and Scott. My problem with my antenna TV situation.
Mm-hmm.
We've spoken about it before, Leo. But the problem that has cropped up on our, we had, when we went to digital, we gained 3 movie channels and 2 weather channels that we didn't have under analog. Now
you're talking about broadcast TV?
Yes.
And you have movie channels?
Yes. Channels, in L.A., channel 5.2 and 5.3.
Oh.
Two of them. 5.2 is called antenna TV. 5.3 is called this.
You know what happened is these broadcast stations, when they were forced to go digital, the FCC forced them to go from their big, fat analog bandwidth to this narrower digital bandwidth.
Right.
The thing that the FCC gave them is multiple channels on the same bandwidth. So
right.
You've got channel 5, but you've got channel 5.1, 5.2.
5.2, 5.3.
And some stations don't do anything with them. Some stations take all the bandwidth and do high def. But when they're doing standard definition on channel 5.0, they have enough bandwidth to do something different. So you're seeing music channels. You're seeing interesting uses of these side channels.
Right.
And I think that's probably what you're getting there, Stan.
That's what we gained at that point.
Right. That was the carrot they gave you.
Yes. Now, what prompted the call earlier when you were talking about differences in volume from channel to channel, I have a different type of problem on occasions watching a movie, and the audio and video goes out of synchronization.
Mm.
The audio will be following the video. And I don't know what's causing that.
Well, it happens all the time on digital. It has to do with compression. And unfortunately, there probably isn't much you can do with it.
Now, if the audio is following, is after the video, there isn't much you can do about it. Very often, the video follows the audio. That is, you hear the sound before. It looks like the sound is coming out of the person's mouth.
Ahead of time. That's because the audio is easier to decompress. It gets
decompressed
faster.
Correct. The video takes more processing power and time, and that's easy to fix.
Is there a button?
Well, on most AV receivers and a lot of TVs these days, there's a lip sync feature. that lets you add delay to the audio and sync it up with the video. But if the audio is behind the video, you're kind of out of luck.
Yes, because my TV set is a 1995 Sony that's still working fine.
Yeah, good.
So, it actually isn't, you know, Stan, because the audio is following the video.
But that may not be the TV's fault. That may be the broadcaster's fault.
I suspect it's the broadcaster.
Right.
And these side channels are not putting as much energy into as they would put into their main channel.
Exactly.
So you might call them, Stan, and shake your fist at them.
Exactly right.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy at hometheater.com. More of your calls to come. 888-ASK-LEO. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
88 Ask Leo. I shouldn't give out that number. We got so many callers and only a few more minutes. It sure runs fast.
Man.
We've got Scott Wilkinson in studio. He's the online editor for Home Theater Magazine and joins us every week, but not for a whole 3 hours. It's so nice to have that
much. It's so nice to have some breathing room and just really be able to stretch out. And hanging out in the studio with all the folks here today, it's just wonderful.
You may hear a little burble in the background. That crowd is visiting us. Is the folks who have come by our open house. We're opening the studio officially. We've been here for 4 weeks, but we're opening it officially tonight. And we're having kind of an open house, and it's a lot of fun to have all
time
the people visit.
Party.
Yeah. Giant disco ball.
That disco ball is so cool. I hope you're going to play disco music in there.
We got a DJ. I'm sure he will. Ted on the line. Mariposa, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm a huge fan. I go back to the C-band days on my 8-foot satellite dish.
Holy smokes.
In the early days of tech TV, we weren't on many cable channels, but we could at least broadcast in the clear on the C-band.
And that
satellites.
Was Bob Heil's time, too. He was
a big dish dealer. Yeah.
Big dish dealer in those days, yeah.
That was fantastic. But anyway, I bought a 3D TV.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you. And
I'm so sorry. We have differing opinions.
Leo and I differ on this one, but okay, go ahead.
Well, I was a skeptic, just like Leo was, but we needed to upgrade our TV, so I bought an LG 47-inch with the passive glasses.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, we're impressed.
Very good.
The glasses are great. It has a very wide angle of view.
In the horizontal direction.
Correct. What really impressed us is the 2D to 3D up conversion.
Interesting.
So that you can, with your passive glasses, with any high-def TV signal or Blu-ray movie, you can flip the switch on the TV and put on your glasses and get not a bad rendition of 3D.
Ted, your brain has been poisoned. You've been watching too many 3D movies. Now you expect everything to pop, huh?
Leo and I disagree on this. 2D to 3D conversion isn't as good as native 3D content, but, you know, a lot of people like it, and if you do, more power to you.
Well, absolutely. And of course, what we've pointed out in the past is that these days, to get the top-of-the-line TVs, you're often going to get a 3D TV whether you want it or not.
That's right, and you don't have to use it. If you don't like 3D, don't use it. You're going to get a better 2D TV in the process.
They build in everything.
And that's what the reason was to buy a TV, not a 3D. But the point to Leo is, hey, you know, I might be a converted.
I'm going to have to give it a chance now just because of you, Ted. What do you like in native 3D? Is there a movie that you think it really is great for native 3D?
Well, I'm still exploring that. I purchased a regular 3D DVD that shows the space shuttle.
That would be cool.
Oh, you mean Blu-ray, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Blu-ray.
Yeah. I love space shuttle and space station and all that kind of stuff in 3D. Really, really nice. Also, the underwater documentaries, they have several of those. I think documentaries and that sort of thing just looks great in 3D. It's one of the best applications of 3D technology.
Now, let me get to my question.
Oh, please.
To my horror, I passed 3D signal through my 2-year-old Pioneer receiver.
Yes.
And so I want all your listeners, Leo, to understand that when if you jump into a 3D and are running an AV system, you're going to upgrade your AV receiver.
Yeah, because it's only got 2D capability.
That's right. You're right. That receiver is not going to pass the 3D information through it to the TV.
Right.
So the
My question is, can I hook my HDMI direct to the TV? The TV has an optical out.
Mm-hmm.
Can I route that into the receiver and just have my audio come through my system that way and still have all the codec coding and all that good stuff? Or is that...
Yes and no. You can certainly do it that way. I would recommend that you instead take the HDMI from the Blu-ray player, go directly into the TV, as you suggest, then take the optical or coax digital output from the Blu-ray player and send that directly to the AV receiver. And the reason is, I've heard tales that some TVs don't easily pass DTS or Dolby bitstreams once they get them from HDMI. So sending that directly from the Blu-ray player to the receiver is guaranteed to work, whereas doing it, as you suggest, HDMI to the TV and then optical from the TV to the receiver might work or it might not work. Now,
okay.
It does mean you have to switch the TV and the receiver separately to get both the picture and the sound, and it means you're not going to hear Dolby True HD or DTS HD, the high-resolution, lossless audio that Blu-ray offers. You're going to hear only standard Dolby Digital or DTS, which are lossy, less high quality. But for now, until you get a new receiver, it's the best way to go.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ted.
My pleasure.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Scott Wilkinson, we're running out of time.
Oh,
is there anything
no.
you want to plug? You do a great show. If you really like home theater, the Home Theater Geek Show.
Home Theater Geek Show, I would be happy to plug that a little bit. It's a podcast that I do Mondays, 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Pacific time, 4:30 to 5:30 Eastern. You can tune in and watch us record live at live.twit.tv. And I always monitor the chat room during the show. We have different guests every week to talk about different things. This coming Monday is I'm actually off. I'm on vacation.
Good. You deserve that.
So I'm going to go on vacation this week, so we're dark.
We've got about 30 shows in the can here. Right?
Oh, we've got 78 now.
I didn't realize you've been doing that long.
I've been doing
long,
yeah. Next week, week after this, I've got Fred Marr on, who is a sound mixer, an audio mixer, works with DTS. We're going to be talking about multi-channel sound up to and beyond 11.1. So if you can imagine putting 11 speakers around your room or more, it should be a very interesting show.
No kidding.
Then the week after that is Labor Day, so we won't be on for that. And the week after that, I will be having on some people from home theater from our magazine to talk about the Cedia show, a wrap-up of the Cedia show. What did we see there? This is the Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association show, the second biggest show of the year after CES in January. And we will be covering that during the show. You can read our blogs on hometheater.com. And then Home Theater Geeks on Monday, I'm planning to have Tom Norton, Rob Sabin, maybe somebody else on talk about... Leo just knocked his headphones off his head there as he gets his picture taken. Talk about the show as after the fact and after we get home and have put several miles on our shoes. Nothing like CES, by the way. That's many miles on our shoes.
Scott, it's been so much fun. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Thank you all for watching. And we'll be back next week with more Geek Talk. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week.
Looking thing here.
I
suppose I could start the tech guy if Leo is
Leo's
here,
not
but
in
I know
the room.
He will be. I have no doubt of that whatsoever. I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
John, it's showtime, buddy.
Oh, my God.
Music bed's going to run out in 30.
Well, hey there. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte.
Hold on, Scott. Start again. Go.
Well, hey, hey, hey there. A good day to you. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in Leo Laporte's brand new studio as he sits down and starts the show. Here he is.